I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
This podcast was recorded on Wurundjeri land. We pay our respect to their elders past and present, and to the traditional owners of the game Mangrook, without which our game wouldn't exist. This is Footy Actually, brought to you by Play On Radio. Hello and welcome to Footy Actually, the alternative listening footy podcast for diehard fans. My name is Kel Rowe, and I'm here with my co-host, Gemma Bastiani, AFLW analyst extraordinaire. How are you going, Gem? All tuck it out from round one?
It went very quickly, should I say.
Yeah.
Sunday afternoon, I was like, wait, what? We've waited 8 months and it's already done?
I know. We'll get to that tipping point soon where we'll be starting to get sad about it being over. That's how quickly it goes.
Yeah, because it's too short.
Well, the opening round brought us the growth, development and excitement that we'd all been waiting for. It began with some Friday night footy at Franger. We saw a host of debutants across the league and some in new colours. The spectacle was arguably dampened by some pretty nasty injuries, and the weekend finished with the Premiership side landing firmly on the bottom of the ladder.
Yeah, there was some interesting things going on the weekend, I think, which are worth talking about. So
let's crack on. So we started the weekend, of course, down at Frankston, a new venue for the AFLW in this season. We saw St Kilda host the Tigers and unfortunately suffer a 38-point loss. The Tigers were cool, calm and collected around the stoppages and dominant in their contested work. They led into space really well and ultimately they won the ball. That handball chain of possession at the top of the fourth quarter was absolutely elite. And I was really excited to see Poppy Kelly. She did really well in her debut for the Tigers. On the other side of the fence, there was a couple of interesting player position debuts. We saw Tani White and Tilly Lucas-Rod move into the midfield, which was pretty awesome.
Yeah, so the Poppy Kelly one is interesting. Her first ever win as a Saint came against Richmond. Her first ever win as a Tiger came against the Saints. So that's just a fun fact.
Nice.
Yeah, we knew that Tani White would play on the ball. We'd kind of been told that in preseason. Tilly Lucas-Rod was probably more of a surprise. I think she was outstanding in terms of providing a little bit of a point of difference to their midfield. We know Liv Vesely is a very good player. We know Rosie Dillon is a very good player. Quite similar, whereas Lucas-Rod gave a little bit of a point of difference there.
Yeah.
It's not to the extent that, you know, Tiana Smith would, who is a completely different player, but it allowed them a little bit more flexibility. And I think personally watching the game, they got probably the better of the midfield in the first quarter. And then after that, Richmond sorted themselves out. They made some changes. The midfielders became more aware of protecting Mon Conti because we knew Mon was going to have a good season. Her getting a full preseason, obviously being a big thing, but you know, she needs protection. She can't be the only one there. So I think Sarah Hosking, and then they did move Katie Brennan in there. And I think Katie's matured as a midfielder, I think, than when she was first in the midfield in 2020. And I think that made a difference. I wouldn't say play Katie Brennan in the midfield every week, but if you do need that point of difference, that change up in the middle of a game, something's not quite working, she is a player you can put in there. She will protect Mon. And I think that's the big thing. Mon ended up with 29 disposals, 9 clearances, 70% disposal efficiency, which is just wild. So yeah, shout out to Mon Conti. She, with a few of the injuries that have happened as well, she might be favorite to take out the BNF.
Yeah, I mean, her performance was huge. Obviously, the stats show it, but goes to show what happens when you give your focus to that preseason, and it's really paid off. And I definitely noticed that as the game progressed, they really did well to kind of understand what the gameplay with the Saints was. So I saw on a number of occasions when the Saints went to kick into space, they were just so quick off the mark and led into the space and intercepted the ball. It was really impressive.
Yeah, and I think the other thing was the story of this one, some of the debutantes that played. So the Saints did debut two players, Leah Cutting and Lucy Burke, both had 5 touches, probably didn't get as involved as the Saints would have hoped. Lucy Burke did have some really good moments in defense, reading the ball, coming in and intercepting.
Yeah.
But for Richmond, Megan Keeley, obviously.
Huge.
Kicked the 2 goals. She's a mature age recruit. You know, she can run through that midfield as well, but she looked quite happy in that forward line. And Stella Reed, you know, her quick thinking, roving off a pack to kick her first goal was really clever. And then, yeah, Amelia Yasser had a really good game, maybe a little bit quieter than the others, but she still had an impact in that forward line. So I think there's some good stuff going on there at Richmond.
Yeah, absolutely. They just seemed to really take their chances when they had an opportunity in front of goal too, and it paid dividends in the end. I think there was a couple of quick, neat snaps from Taylor Stahl as well.
Yeah, Taylor Stahl just knows where the goals are.
Goal magnet. That's what we like to see. Do you want to give me a player and performer votes?
Yeah, as long as you don't copy mine.
No, we've done separate homework this time around.
Yeah, I was just making a joke about the tipping last week. Is that mean? Sorry.
Well, I mean, it's probably good that you didn't copy me in the tipping, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, we will, says the person who did really well. I gave Monconti 3, as I said. Most touches and clearances by a Richmond player in a Richmond Guernsey, as well as Mon's personal best. So got to go with her. Courtney Wakefield, I went with 2. Her presenting and marking in the forward line is such a valuable asset that not many clubs have, and Richmond are lucky to have Wakefield. And then I've given one to Lucas Rod because I think in what was a tough night for the Saints, she did actually shine.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I didn't copy you, but I have to agree. Mon Conti gets 3 from me.
I think the world has to agree.
Yeah. If you don't agree, well, just get out. But yeah, her performance obviously huge for the Tigers, and I can't wait to see how she goes as we progress through the season. Like I said, a real chance for League BNF. I gave 2 points to Megan Keeley. That was a great debut. Obviously, snagging 2 goals was fantastic. She had 11 disposals and made 5 tackles as well. So a pretty solid effort. And I've given 1 point to Tani White, who moved into a new role, did a pretty good job at that, and also managed to kick a goal, which is a fantastic way to start off the year. Game 2, obviously Saturday, we were down at Arden Street watching North Melbourne and Geelong. Geelong were pretty determined to avoid a repeat of last season's loss, and they gave the Roos a pretty big scare with their significant improvement, but ultimately the Roos took away the victory by 8 points. So it was 4-2-26 over 2-6-18. North wrestled away the win, but it wasn't exactly pretty, and there was definitely a few big knocks in the game as well. With Carney out, I felt like the middle shouldered the load quite well, but it kind of constrained their game a little bit.
Yeah, I think not having Carney, but also Ellie Gavalis, you know, in the conversation about Emma Carney being out, people seem to have forgotten that Ellie Gavalis also wasn't playing. And Ellie Gavalis is an incredible ball winner, very good player in that midfield.
Hmm.
Without those two players in the midfield, the Roos didn't have the luxury of spinning Jenna Bruton out onto the wing when they wanted to mix it up a little bit, you know, doing all those sorts of things that we saw them do a lot last year. The Roos, if they win the uncontested ball, they generally win the game. And that's off the back of, you know, Ashmore, Eddie and Bruton on the outside of the contest. And then you add into it, they've prepared the preseason with a forward line that has Jasmine Garner playing largely in that forward line rather than on the ball. They weren't able to do that. Both of those two players had to play as inside mids for the bulk of the game. And you could just say it just didn't quite let them get the game going on the terms that they wanted. And then it also didn't help that Caitlin Ashmore had to go off for a period of time when she tweaked her ankle. So I think that was the big thing for North Melbourne is they are a good team and they do have depth, but they've crafted a game style based on having the depth and not necessarily based on depth in every single area. So there's a lot of inside mids that can play. I don't know that they have a lot of wingers that can do that job if one or two of them aren't able to. So that's probably my one question about North. Whereas with Geelong, we did see improvement. There are great new players in there. Nina Morrison is back and showed that she's still a very good player. Georgie Prasparkas got the rising star. Nord, you know, she's a very good player, had 20 touches on debut. I think the thing about Geelong that was frustrating was in the second quarter in particular, they reverted to that desperate long kick out of defense just to clear the ball and get some breathing space, but they're kicking directly to a well set up opposition and it's coming straight back in. And that's what we saw from Geelong week in, week out last year. We were hoping that that wouldn't be the case again this year. The positive, however, is in the third quarter, they'd done that in the second. In the third quarter, they came out. They found possession in the forward half, allowed Phoebe Williams and a few of the other forwards to sit in the forward line rather than having to come up the field. And they were far more dangerous. So Geelong, when they can get a possession in the forward half, do look like a good side and they have the personnel, but they can't revert to that desperation.
Old habits.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing for them to watch out for. If a team can trap them in their defense, it takes them a while to work out how to adjust to that. But again, good showings given the circumstances for both teams, I think.
I was really excited to see Georgie take to the field for a fair amount of the first quarter. She was right up ruining Garner's flow with the ball. She was just everywhere on it, and that was really great to see. Lots of pressure play there. Mm. Rachel Kearns was also quite a nice addition for the Cats, the new Irish recruit. And I thought some of the stuff that she did was really good. So I look forward to see just how she develops with the side across the season as well.
Yeah, and Zali Friswell broke the record for youngest player debut as well with 18 years and 9 days. So
incredible. And held her own pretty well too.
Yeah, Zali and Georgie have such a good connection because they have played a lot of junior footy together as well. So that's a pairing to watch over the years.
Awesome. Love to see it. Play on performer votes.
I mean, we haven't talked about her at all, but Ash Riddell equaled the disposal record in the competition with 35 and broke the contested possession record with 22. So got to go with Ash Riddell. She also had 7 clearances and 478 meters gained. So that's a huge game from a player that knew that they were missing some key people.
She really stepped up.
Yeah. I've given 2 to Georgie Prasparkas again, one of only 5 players this round to get more than 400 meters gained. 3 of them were in that game. So it was Ash Moore, Riddell and Georgie Prasparkas. And yeah, rising star nomination. And then 1 to Jenna Bruton, because even though she was in a role that the team probably wouldn't have wanted to have to use her in, she still played a really good game, had 24 touches, 3 inside 50s.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, we forget sometimes the depth and reliability of North Melbourne's middle. It's incredible. And yeah, what Ash Riddell did was fantastic. She just goes and goes and goes.
Mm.
Unsurprisingly, I've also got her for my 3 there. It'll be rude not to. I've gone for Jenna Bruton at number 2. Because likewise, I think the 2 of those players stepped up in the absence of Galavis and Carney. So great to see that effort equals reward there. And of course, I've given 1 to Georgie Prasparkas because that was a great debut.
Mm-hmm.
Rising star nom straight off the bat. I imagine that there would have been a fair amount of pressure externally and a lot to live up to. But she just handled it like a pro. I actually saw her at the Carlton game on the Sunday and told her how much I loved her game. It was really great. So
I mean, she won the first clearance of the game straight off the bat. She was killing it.
So very good to see.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Following on from the Arden Street game, we head over to Whitnoble to see the Hampson Hardiman Cup play out for the 6th year running. Western Bulldogs hosted Melbourne and weren't able to hold on to that cup. Melbourne prevailed and took out a 24-point victory, 3-4-22 to Melbourne 6-10-46 in the end. The Ds aren't messing around this season. There was a lot of short kicks to Mark leading into space and creating an overlap for a loose player in the corridor and just undid the Dogs' defence on so many occasions. Despite that, in classic captain style, Blackburn attempted to rally a fight back in the second half, but the Ds levelled up in the final term and took home the cup in an extremely dominant and definitive win. Outside of the game, I did particularly enjoy that great little zinger from Daisy Pierce, wondering whether or not the Bulldogs girls knew where Casey Fields were for the next Hampson Hardiman Cup, which was a nice way to, I guess, lighten the mood at the end of the match.
Well, I mean, this battle has always been a Western Bulldogs home fixture, so fair.
She's not wrong.
It's a fair call. Yeah, I think the thing with Melbourne is they could have taken the easy route. They had a forward line. I pointed this out to my brother, who I was sitting with at this game at one point. The forward five was Daisy Pierce, Taylor Harris, Shelley Scott, Jackie Parry, and Kate Hall. You know, when you've got a forward line like that, it's very easy to just be like, oh, they're good. Let's just bomb it in there. Trust that they'll do it. But they didn't take that easy route. They very systematically broke down the Dogs' defense. They did a really good job of using the width of the ground, trying to keep the ball in the corridor to keep all of their options open. And the forwards did a really good job of making space for each other. They weren't getting in each other's way. So that really clean, decisive ball movement completely broke the Dogs down in the first quarter, especially when Melbourne was kicking into the wind. And it was really hard for the Dogs to deal with that. Obviously, we've got to make mention of the fact that the Dogs were missing a lot of their most important defenders. Eleanor Brown was tasked with Taylor Harris, you know, giving up quite a bit of size. The Dogs were up against it. The Ds have clearly come in with a very specific game style they want to play. They want to use the corridor, and it showed on the field. The time that the Dogs got back into it in that third quarter, they were dominating in the center. So when the Dogs take control of the stoppages, they are very hard to defend because they do move the ball quickly, and Bonnie Toogood one out is a, you know, is usually going to win that. It's worth noting that Karen Paxson was off the ground for a lot of that third quarter as well. So Melbourne was without her, and Ellie Blackburn just got to work. So interesting how the game ebbed and flowed. I'm still concerned that Melbourne kicked 6-10 because you'd hope that after five seasons they'd have worked on that. let's see how that develops, because again, they got knocked out of finals last year by, you know, having more scoring shots than their opposition but not kicking accurately enough. So we'll see how that goes. Hopefully that cleans up, whereas last year they started really, really accurately and fell away. Let's hope this year is the opposite of that for them.
Yeah, it was really classy movement of the football, so let's have some classy scoring shots to match that, huh?
Oh, I should also make mention, Izzy Huntington.
Yeah.
We love you. We hope that you're dealing okay.
Who are your play on performer votes going to?
Play on performer votes. I've given three to Eden Zanker. In the corresponding fixture last year, Eden Zanker had a lot of shots on goal. She ended the game with three behinds, but I think she had six shots on goal in that game. She used the ball at 40-something percent. This time, she had 20 touches at 70%. She was a big bodied midfielder, but also moved around the ground really well. She's a superstar in the making. So this could be the year of Eden Zanker. I've given two to Tyler Hanks. She didn't necessarily get as much of the ball as we are used to seeing from her, but the way she positioned herself as Melbourne moved the ball down the ground was spectacular. And the moment to set up Casey Sheriff's goal, the first goal of the game, Tyler Hanks' ability to get out into space in the corridor, that should be studied by people. How does Tyler Hanks find space like that? So I've given her the two, and then one to Ellie Blackburn, because again, her ability to rally her troops can't be underrated.
No, absolutely. She has the ability to really change the momentum in the game, and it just unfortunately didn't pan out this time around. I've given three votes to Eden Zanker. I just think it's incredible when taller players are able to move with such grace and fluidity across the field. It's really impressive. I mean, it's one thing to be a great up and under footballer, but to do that when you're a good whack taller than most of your opposition is really impressive. I've given 2 votes to Kate Hoare because she is just the silkiest football player. She just appears out of nowhere. And like you said, they didn't get in each other's way up front. So there was always space to move. And she took a number of opportunities and they paid dividends. And of course, 1 vote to Ellie Blackburn. Totally agree with you. Absolute captain's effort every game. We can't ask for anything more.
And unfortunately, she will be out of the side next weekend. So let's see how the Dogs go.
Yeah, that is a big out on top of everything else.
Yes.
To round out the game on Saturday, we had the Western Derby between West Coast Eagles and Fremantle. We obviously watched the practice match before Christmas, but this time the game was for points. I think ultimately it's a much more competitive showing from the Eagles. They put a burst of scores on in the third, but Freo just charged away with the win in the final quarter. Emma Swanson kicked an absolute pearler of a goal for West Coast and then got a bit overzealous with their post-goal celebration at the expense of opposition captain Hayley Miller. And Ebony Antonio was just absolutely exceptional and unsurprisingly took home shared derby honours with Kiara Bowers for the night.
Yeah, I think the thing that we take away from this is fitness is for Freo is a big priority for them, and it's really evident on the field. They run out that game. It felt like it was anyone's game at 3-quarter time.
Yeah.
And then in the final quarter, they piled on 3 goals, 5 to no score, and that was the difference. And that's how Freo, you know, got away with a few last year. The Carlton game comes to mind, but it's that off-season running programs that they do with Kate Starr and all that sort of stuff that allows them to do this. So while there's definitely a lot of room for improvement from Freo, that fitness is going to put them in really good stead. On Emma Swanson, I know that, you know, we don't like any real nastiness or anything, but I really liked that she was trying to get her team up and about.
Yeah.
Whether she went about it the right way remains to be seen. If that's what gets her team up and about, great. She didn't punch anyone, but she did get into Hayley.
Yeah.
Because they had been going at it all before that incident happened as well. Emma Swanson also had a flipping great game. She ended the game with 23 disposals, 6 clearances, and the most meters gained for the round with 489. So she was really trying to surge the ball for her team. I think for West Coast, it's still that forward line that breaks down a little bit. They want to create space in the forward line and run it in, but too often they maybe move the ball too quickly and then don't have anyone to send the ball to, and then they slow their game down, then it gets clogged up and it comes back out. So I think maybe they've just got to work out how to adjust that want for space up forward while still keeping at least someone at home that isn't outnumbered. I don't know. That's my concern for them. Otherwise, they actually do look like a really solid competitive team.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see how they go, particularly this week. They're playing Gold Coast Suns, so they're likely to have probably a more evenly matched kind of game. So I think we'll see some good footy there. What were your play on performer votes?
Yeah, so got to give the 3 to Ebony Antonio. Kicked the 3 goals, you know, probably goal of the year as well amongst that. She's also just, you know, this game was shades of round 1 2019, where Freo debuted 7 players. In this game, they debuted 6. Ebony Antonio was a shock forward in that 2019 game. Same thing happened this week, you know, got the win, that sort of stuff. She's a star. We should say that. I've given 2 to Kiara Bowers, 14 tackles, not too bad. Also had a lot of the ball, 24 touches and a few other things. So, you know, can't go past her. And then I've given 1 to Emma Swanson. As I said, I think her game has been a little bit underrated across the conversation about footy this weekend.
And despite the fact that we did our homework separately, I'm going to have to agree with you on all fronts there. I've given 3 to Ebony Antonio, 2 to Kiara Bowers and 1 to Emma Swanson. Love a good rivalry, and I look forward to seeing these guys hit it out again. Sunday afternoon, we got our grand final rematch, and Adelaide claimed revenge against Brisbane. The premiership side suffered the loss of key players to injury early in the first half, and the Crows took advantage of those gaps in both the Lions' forward and back lines. And they took home the game by a massive 30 points.
Yeah, so let's start by saying the Brisbane injuries suck.
Massively.
Kate Luckin's doing her ACL. I think she played 8% of game time. It was very early in the game that she went down. And as much as, you know, Conan and Campbell and those defensive players for Brisbane are solid and very good players, Kate Luckins is irreplaceable. So the scramble to cover that took them some time. And then when Dakota went down as well, who's going to miss, I think, 5 to 6 weeks. So that, you know, most of the season.
Yeah.
It was just too much to be able to cover in game, I think. So we've got to say that about Brisbane. But Adelaide, their manic pressure was something, well, we talked about this in the preview. The way Brisbane moved the ball in the grand final didn't allow the pressure to come on because they didn't necessarily always take possession or things like that. Mm. Adelaide absolutely went to town on that. Their pressure from the first siren until the last was so full on. Brisbane had absolutely no space, no time to think. And I've never seen a team do it as consistently throughout four quarters as Adelaide did it. And again, shows how fit they are because that's exhausting. I think it was 29 degrees and humid where that game was being played as well. That's the thing to keep an eye on for Adelaide, because if they're going to pressure you like that and you can't get a clean possession to take a breath, it's very hard to score. Brisbane had a lot of inside 50s in that game, could not hit the scoreboard. So that's a warning from Adelaide, I think.
It was unreal. I went into watching that game thinking, you know, we're going to see all the greats from Brisbane put that pressure on, but it was absolutely flipped. And like we talked about it in the preview, how would Adelaide counter the pressure that and the way the style of play that Brisbane have? And they did it. They just completely bamboozled them from start to finish. It was something else to watch. Whether or not we mean to, sometimes people just go, oh, you know, Adelaide. And then next minute they finish on top of the ladder. So definitely not one to discredit, especially this year, you know, like it's their last year potentially playing together as this list before a lot of change happens with the new teams coming in. So huge, never underestimate them.
Mm-hmm. Accurate.
You play on performer votes?
So I've given 3 to Anne Hatchard. The thing that I really like about what Anne Hatchard has been doing in a game slowly over time has been winning the ball and getting into space before disposing of it. So she had 26 disposals, but 19 of those were kicks. And that's what Adelaide really needed when finding the balance between their ability to win clearance and their ability to create score or create attack from that clearance. And Anne Hatchard is the player that's been doing that. So keep an eye on how she moves out of congestion before using the ball. I think that's a really interesting one. Ash Woodland kicked 4 goals, the only player this weekend to kick 4 goals. So she gets my 2. And then I've given 1 to Aura O'Dwyer because amongst all the negativity about what happened to Brisbane, she had 21 disposals, took 7 marks and led 7 tackles. So let's shout out Aura.
Yeah, absolutely. And on this front, I think we're in agreement as well. I think Hatch is a great player. I always rate her work. She puts in oodles of effort in the preseason. And obviously, you know, it pays off year after year. Ash Woodland's bag of 4, got to give that points. And yeah, I think Bates and Anderson, always reliable fixtures in the Lions side, but nice to give Aura O'Dwyer a shout out as well because she put in huge effort. Then we had our second last game for the weekend, Carlton v Collingwood at Icon Park. It was an extremely hot afternoon. I was there in the stands for that one. And ultimately, pretty undisciplined form from Carlton saw them lose control, momentum, and the game. The Pies overran them at the finish of the fourth. It was 3-7, 25, 2, 6, 8, 44. The Pies are looking dangerous, even with Davey going down in the fourth term due to an ACL. I think that's not going to rattle them too much in terms of their game strategy because they just have such a depth of list. There's plenty of entertaining matchup battles across the deck, but my particular favourite was Karen Harrington and Chloe Malloy. Just furious pressure-filled affair. They were all over each other trying to wrestle out each other and was just, yeah, great to watch.
Yeah, so I covered this one. So I had the advantage of sitting high, could see everything, which is, you know, my favourite way to watch a match. I think the thing for me, early in the game, Carlton were actually taking it to Collingwood. Grace Egan was playing directly on Bree Davey and was, you know, Bree Davey can't be stopped, but she was able to limit her a little bit.
Yeah.
Even though Collingwood are getting those shots on goal and missing, so it could have been a much bigger margin, I think Carlton were hanging in there. And then when Grace went down, she's broken 2 ribs and punctured her lung, so she's going to be missing for much of the season now. I think when she went down, things kind of fell apart a little bit for Carlton, and then the undisciplined stuff came in. So, you know, Darcy Vesio, the stand rule caught Darcy off guard, I think. 50-meter penalty to Ruby Schleicher with, I think, a minute to go in the quarter.
And it was straight in front of goals.
Yeah, so got put into the goal square, kicked a goal. But the fact that 30 seconds later, Elise O'Day didn't give the ball back on the full to Alison Downey. Downey got put within, I want to say, 25 meters of goal. Downey's a pretty straight shooter, has had kicked 9 goals straight in her career prior to that, kicked her 10th goal, the 10th goal of her career after the siren. And from there, it felt like, oh, there's movement here. And then for them to start the third quarter with another 50-meter penalty from O'Day, putting Aisling Sheridan in the goal square. From there, it was like, it's a really big hill to climb now. And they've kind of put themselves in that position because they were fighting it out. But those three things, to give up 18 points directly from 50-meter penalties and to lose by 19, there's no looking past that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that right there is the game. And I'm pretty sure Daniel Harford said that in his post-match review on Downey's goal too. I mean, part of me was pretty thrilled that she kicked that goal in that first round match against
250th goal.
250th goal at the venue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty special. And, nice to see everyone get around. Obviously she's, pretty popular down at Victoria Park there. So great to see her continuing her footy with the Pies. As much as it sucks as a Blue fan to say that, but who was your play on performer votes for the game?
So I've given 3 to Lambert. So I think Lambert maybe didn't get as much attention last year because of the year that Davey had, because of the year that Beniki had. But Lambert is still a very good footballer, very good contestable player. So I've given 3 to her. I've given 2 to Sarah Rowe. I think she battled some injuries last year. She played very, very well in the 2020 season, then had to deal with some shoulder injuries and couldn't really get consistently on the park. She had 21 touches this weekend. More importantly, I think she went at 81% efficiency with those 21 touches. That is massive. If you can 80% of the time hit your target, put your team in a good position, that is so beneficial, I guess, to how you want to move the ball, because you can trust that that player is going to get it where it needs to go. And Collingwood consistently over the past few years have been one of the best ball using sides in the competition. And Sarah Rowe is a big part of that. So 2 votes to her. And then I've given 1 to Ruby Schleicher, who was told in the off season to find a bit more defense to her game. And she absolutely did that. You know, she did kick the goal, but she held Darcy Vesio to 4 touches. Yeah. Shout out to Ruby Schleicher.
Yeah. Yeah. She played a pretty incredible game. I've gone 3 votes to Sarah Rowe. In a team like Collingwood, it's hard to shine when everyone's doing really well. So I think it's great to see her, come through there and have a really great day on the park. I've given 2 votes to Ruby Schleicher because incredible stuff in defense. She's one of my favorite rebounding defenders to watch.
Yeah.
She's just a really, really dynamic player. And again, much like Harrington and Malloy, she was all over Vesio. She's also quite an amazing mark too. I love watching her go up in a pack.
Took 8 marks, I think. Yeah. Yeah.
Ultimately, it was her knee that put Egan out.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm not surprised. You wouldn't want to be on the end of that for sure. And of course, 1 vote to Karen Harrington, just because I enjoyed that defensive battle enormously. And I think she plays such a solid role down the back. She, obviously captains the side and has a lot of responsibility on that front, but really pulls her back line together. Much, I think, in the same way that Ellie Blackburn kind of pulls her team to perform. It's really impressive.
Yeah.
And to finish the weekend, we had Gold Coast Suns up in Mackay, not the floating stadium that everyone was talking about at the beginning of the week. They hosted the Greater Western Sydney Giants and only went down to the Giants by 15 points, which was pretty nice to see after them taking out the wooden spoon in 2021. This was exciting for a number of reasons. It's obviously the debut of Charlie Rowbottom, the number 1 draft pick. She showed plenty of promise in that game, so I look forward to seeing more of her. The Suns led on the scoreboard for the first half of the match, but the Giants kind of grit their teeth and pushed through for the win, thanks to stellar performances from the ever-reliable Elise Parker and Alicia Eva. And GWS showed that they can hit the scoreboard without solely relying on Staunton.
Well, we do know my stat about how since Staunton debuted in 2018, the Giants have only ever won 2 games without Staunton kicking a goal, and that continues because she kicked 2 in this game. I think the thing about the Giants that I was really impressed by was that they seemed to have cleaned up their disposal. They seemed to have worked on that skill. They had some really neat passages of play, which gave their forwards best chance to score effectively. They got, you know, Rebecca Privatelli one out to take that mark, putting it out into space for them rather than popping it right on their head when they're in a 1v3.
Yeah.
Things that we saw the Giants do a lot over the past 5 years, those things are starting to clean up a little bit. So I think that's a really positive change for the Giants. I was also really impressed by Ali Morfitt, who was supporting Erin McKinnon in the ruck. She seems to be really clever in the way she positions herself to be an outlet, and then she's pretty reliable in the air. So I'm excited to see how she improves as the season goes on. Obviously, Chloe Dalton going down with that shoulder injury, but she didn't look great after. She didn't look very happy after the game. So, you know,
yeah.
Chloe Dalton is such an outstanding footballer. We lose when she doesn't play.
And before that happened, she was providing some like really good run and carry for the Giants. So hopefully it isn't too bad and she isn't out for too long because, great player, really dynamic to watch.
Yeah.
Who were your player and performer votes for the round?
I'm giving 3 to Elise Parker. You know, keeps doing what she's doing. I think the thing similar to Anne Hatchard that I really liked about Parker was of her 21 touches, 16 were kicks. So she's doing what she can to get the ball moving into an attacking position more often than not. 2 to Alicia Eva. Eva is kind of back to some vintage form from her. I don't know that we've seen a game like this from her in a long time. And then 1 to Kalinda Howarth, who was, you know, slated to play in defense during the preseason. And I think because of some of the outs they've had, ended up playing forward and was really dangerous for them, not just with her own shots on goal, but in terms of making the forward line a dangerous place to be.
Yeah, it's really good to see that for the Suns. I have mirrored you on all 3 of those. Elise Parker gets 3 from me, Alicia Eva gets 2, and Kalinda Howarth gets 1. So we had a couple of questions this week from Mel and Amelia. Mel asked us, was there more first-time goals from first-time players in this round?
We had 5 debutants kick their first goal in round 1 last year. And we've had 5 debutants kick their first goal in round 1 this year. So that's fun. Actually, I lied. We've had 4 this year. Megan Keeley kicked 2. So this year we had Megan Keeley, Stella Reed, Courtney Jones, and Tara Bahana each kick their first goal in their first game this weekend. We had 5 last year. The thing last year, though, was that after round 1, only 3 players kicked a goal in their debut game after that. So let's see how that tracks. But we did have a few players kick their first goal despite it not being their debut game. Rosie Dillon,
Abby McKay
come to mind. There's a few others. So, yeah, it's an interesting one.
Yeah. Mel also asked if you had a favourite from those.
Stella Reed's goal was – I'm a big Stella Reed fan, and watching that goal, the way she curled it through, outstanding.
I really like Tara Bahana's one. She just slammed it on her foot and put it through. No worries. So good. Very good. Amelia asked us, there were 4 individual goal scorers for the Giants. Is this a good sign? Or should we be more concerned about the separation between the mids and the forwards?
So the Giants had 4 individual goal kickers this weekend. Their average goal kickers last year was 2.7. So it is more than what we're used to from them, but they did have 4 individual goal kickers twice last year. The year before, they averaged 2.7 as well. And then the year before that, they actually averaged 3.6. So they've dipped a little bit and they're hopefully coming back up, but let's see if they can continue that support across the board or whether they still end up just relying on 1 or 2 players to do that job.
Should we talk about what games to watch next round?
I think we should.
Who have you got?
So I've probably predictably gone with the Richmond-Melbourne game on Friday night at Punt Road. Richmond showed what they can do. I want to see Richmond back that up against a really good team in Melbourne.
Yeah.
And then on the other side, Melbourne showed that they could pick some things apart. I'd love to see maybe under a little bit more pressure that Richmond might bring if they can do that game style again.
Yeah.
The defense v forward battle is going to be fascinating, because if you think about, you know, Harris, Pierce, Scott, Parry, Hoare up against a Miller, Cordner, Sarah Darcy, you know, a few of those players, I think is a really interesting defensive matchup. The thing that is going to be key to this game is if Melbourne's forwards can create that separation, not allow the supportive intercept defense to come across, that will really restrict, you know, if Sarah Darcy can't be that supporting player in the air, that restricts what Richmond does in terms of their rebound out. But if Richmond can do that, I don't know how Melbourne restructure to find their attack.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's always really good to see what teams do against a quality side. Like, you generally play much, much better football against a quality side, and hopefully, you know, they'll be able to kind of adapt and learn a few things while they're out on the track. I have decided I'm really excited to see Adelaide play North Melbourne at Norwood Oval on Sunday. I'm particularly interested in this one because I think the midfield battle will just be really exceptional to watch. There'll be some really good matchups there. Hopefully Carney's back in the side. Hopefully Galavis is back in the side, and we get to see that. And there's no outs, of course, to Adelaide. I think also interesting, given what we know about North Melbourne's ability to hit the scoreboard. Adelaide obviously have some pretty ripper forwards up front. Ponta is really dangerous. Stevie Lee Thompson's there doing the work. Plenty of options up front. It's great.
Yeah.
And your tips for next week? I mean, we mentioned this earlier. I did not have a particularly great weekend on the tips, as predicted by my fairly flippant submissions last week. Who have you got for round two?
I'm going Melbourne by 18 points.
Well, I've gone the same, but I've gone bigger. I've gone D's by 30.
Wow.
Yeah. It might be a bloodbath. It might not.
Hope so.
Pies v Saints.
I've gone Collingwood by 25. We've just found out that Nick Del Santo won't be available to coach on the weekend, so Paddy Hill will step up. But, yeah, I don't know that the Saints have the personnel to beat Collingwood.
Yeah, after watching Collingwood's efforts on Sunday, I've also backed them in to get up by 30.
Big margins.
Yeah. Brisbane, Carlton.
I know you're going to tip Carlton for this. I'm going with Brisbane. They're back at home. I think they won't let what happened happen again. I don't know that Carlton can bring the manic pressure, or at least for long enough. And I just got a feeling we're going to see some really fun debutants for Brisbane this weekend. So I'm going with Brisbane by 10.
Ooh, well, you're correct. And yes, I am going to tip Carlton, only because I feel like they have to make a decision here to smarten up their footy. I was impressed to see that Carlton didn't sleep in the first quarter. And like we said, they did actually have a really good go of it against the Pies to start off that game. So I'd like to see that for an entire four quarters. And I think potentially with the outs that the Brisbane Lions have, they might just get up by 2 points.
Big call.
I know. I'm known for them. They're not great calls, but they're big. Cats v Dogs down in Geelong.
I'm going Cats by 15. I liked what I saw from the Cats in the second half, and I worry for the Dogs that they just don't have the players available.
Yeah, that was my reasoning too. I've got Cats by 11 because, yeah, any other day of the week, if you had a full-strength Dogs team, it might be a bit different. But, yeah, I think the Cats will come off the back of that performance with a lot of confidence. And I feel like they're going to struggle for personnel. Hopefully there's no more health and safety outs for the Dogs. Eagles, Gold Coast Suns.
Yeah, I like the look of the Suns. I think they fade late in games, so finding a four-quarter performance would be really positive for them. But I still think the Eagles are going to get over the top here by 5. This one notably being played as part of a doubleheader at Witten Oval in Melbourne.
I know what I'm doing on Sunday. Spending all day in the stands. I similarly have decided to back in the Eagles. I think it will be a fairly evenly matched game. I'm excited to see that because I think it'll give both teams an opportunity to really play the kind of football that they want to. But I've gone Eagles by 6. Crows, North Melbourne.
Yeah, I'm going to go Adelaide. It's at Norwood Oval. Adelaide have a very good winning record at Norwood. Adelaide is so settled across the park. North, while I think when they do have the right players in, they're a good side. I'm not sure that their forward line is functioning effectively. And Adelaide, we know, can pile on scores. So I'm going to go Adelaide by 12.
Yeah, look, I ummed and ahed about this one. I had Adelaide by 11. But I've actually decided that I'm going to go Adelaide by 18. It should be a really good game, but like you said, good track record there for the Crows. And to round out the weekend, Frio, Greater Western Sydney, the second part of the doubleheader at Witten.
I'm going to get some messages about this. I'm going Frio. Don't stress. I'm going Frio.
It's okay, Trent. Don't worry.
I don't think this will be as big a margin as most people expect. I'm going to go Frio by 8. I happily accept if the margin is larger, but I don't know that Frio are going to put a team away. I don't know that you can rely on an Antonio, a Miller, and an O'Sullivan to be all of your scoring every single week. So I want to see who else is going to step up there, and that is why I'm only going them by 8.
Okay, well, I've got a little bit more confidence. I've backed in Frio by 20. I think there will be an opportunity for them to really have a competitive hit out against Greater Western Sydney, but I think they will come up the goods.
Let's see.
Nice. Well, I'm excited for round 2. Well, that's a wrap on our review of round 1. We hope you enjoyed round 1 and we hope you enjoyed our review. If you'd like to hear a bit more about footy during your week, you can follow us on Twitter. You can find me at @Ro_Kel, and you can also find at @PlayOnRadioMel there as well. What's your Twitter handle, Jim?
I'm at @GLBastiani. Come and follow me and talk to me.
Excellent. We'll be there. We'll be talking footy. We're going to be obsessed. It's going to be a good season. Well, that's it from us for now. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Footy Actually.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.